There was a period of time a little while ago when Skoda jokes and larder jokes were all the rage. I'm glad I never joined in because I'm now the proud owner of a very battered old Volkswagen Beetle. And recently I had to make a decision about my Beetle because I was proudly showing it to an old school friend of mine and he put it up on his ramp so that we could fix the heating. If you know anything about Beetles, they're freezing unless you fix the heating. And as he drove it onto the ramp and got out of the car, he said, Andy, he said, you've got a problem with your steering. Well, I was not happy because I was not rich and I did not want to have to fork out a lot of money to mend my steering. But you don't ignore the advice of good friends, or do you? I didn't really want to mend the steering because it was expensive. It seemed to be going fine and I don't use the car that much anyway, so my hunch was that I could probably put off the decision a little while. But something inside me kept nagging me. Look, you're taking three children in that car regularly. Look, you need to be careful of other road users. Look, you need to be careful of the car that you've just bought. And eventually, I gave in, and I made the decision. And a big relief swept over me, an even bigger one, once I put it into practice and had the steering fixed. Now I don't have a little voice nagging me to make that decision. Tonight is about making decisions. Maybe it's about taking the advice of a good friend. You see, by my delaying my decision to get the steering fixed, I was in fact deciding not to. And as a friend of mine once said, sitting on the fence is itself a decision. It's a decision not to. When it comes to whether or not we decide to make a commitment to Christ, by putting off that decision, we are in fact saying no. We're not really saying no, not yet. We're really saying no. I want us to look in Acts 24 at somebody who put off that decision. Somebody who chose to delay that decision and by so doing chose to ignore God's call out of love to him. He chose for a long while to sit upon that fence and by so doing walked away from the relationship that was on offer to him from God. Now, I believe the essence of this story that we had read for us is played out between two men. One a captive and one his captor. Now, it's like all the escape stories that you've ever watched on TV, like all the prison stories you've ever seen on TV. This is the showdown between the prisoner and the governor. The meeting of two men, two individuals, one with questions and one with hope. One seemingly had power. The other had a promise. One had an important job and wanted answers for himself. The other had a place reserved for him in heaven and cared passionately for his tormentor. One who had everything, but actually nothing. And one with a faith that transformed his nothingness to give it meaning. Before we look at Felix, let's just ponder for a moment who Paul is, how he came to be in this situation that we had read for us. Paul had been visiting his friends in Jerusalem, wanting to encourage some of the Christians there, but the Jewish leaders there got angry with him and staged a riot, hoping to have him killed. It's all very active stuff, the two chapters leading up to Acts 24, and if you're not familiar with it, far more exciting than GoldenEye, I can assure you. There we are. Anyway, the Jewish leaders staged this riot and tried to have him killed. Just then, as it would happen, the Roman tribune tends to walk by, steps in, drags Paul away and drags him off to question him. Now, the Jewish leaders and the high priest follow the Roman tribune and Paul and try to make enough of a case to have Paul put to death. But the tribune can find no evidence that warranted death or even imprisonment. And heard from a young boy, this is how exciting the plot is, that actually another plot was hatching, one whereby an ambush would have Paul killed as he was transferred to court. So, the tribune, using all his wisdom, sends Paul away. Yes, and sends him to the Roman headquarters at Caesarea, where the governor Felix could be Paul's judge. The tribune sends him also a letter saying there's no evidence to say why this man should be executed or imprisoned. And so we come to Felix and Paul. Dear Felix, Antiochus decides to wait and see Paul's accusers. And there, in tonight's story, Tertullus was making his plea for having Paul sorted out. Now, basically, Paul is Felix's prisoner. There is no evidence, yet Felix doesn't let him go. And I've often wondered when I've read this, does Felix not let him go for fear, as I'll be suggesting later in the talk, or does he hold on to him so that he can question him and quiz him and judge him to see if his story has anything in it for Felix? That's really for us to decide. There's not a lot of evidence to prove which is going on. Whilst he's there, Paul speaks only the truth. Truth as it's been revealed to him, and truth as he tries to live it. Look at it, verse 14. However, I, Paul, admit that I worship the God of our fathers as a follower of the way which they call a sect. And then the reading that Charlie read to us encompassed 2 whole years. 2 whole years in the life of Paul and 2 whole years in the life of Felix. Paul, a prisoner, a child of God, a servant of God, can speak only of what he knows. And that is what Felix can't handle. Felix simply can't or won't understand. It reminds me of the story we'll be reading in a few weeks' time at Easter, when Jesus stands before Pilate, who has the power to send him to the cross. Jesus is truth, and truth stands in front of Pilate and confronts him, and Pilate can't cope. And most of us struggle to cope with truth when it stares us right in the face, because it disempowers us. Until that is, we realize that that truth is what can give us life. Life that transcends humanity. Life that brings with it that freedom that we were hearing about earlier. The freedom that Paul knew despite being in prison and despite looking powerless by this world's standards. So then let's now look at Felix. Felix, the name, actually means happy. And I don't know whether, like me, you muse on these things when you go to opticians and dentists, but opticians, it seems to me, always wear glasses. Dentists always have bad breath, and nurses always have bad backs. And happy, Felix was not. Felix. It's only an observation. But Felix was a judge, and he carried a great sense of weight on his shoulders and a great sense of responsibility. And I want to suggest tonight that all of us are a little bit like Felix. And maybe you feel weighed down by the responsibilities and the pressures of life. We're like Felix in many ways, as I'm going to suggest. Felix was avoiding making that step of faith. Then Felix, who was well acquainted with the way in verse 22, adjourned the proceedings until Lysias the commander comes. He adjourned, and his whole life was about adjourning. It was about putting off. It was leaving until tomorrow what could have been done today. That's really who Felix was, the adjourner. Are you an adjourner? Are you putting off what could be done today? You see, Felix was well acquainted already with the way that Paul was part of. And yet he keeps Paul in prison and has numerous discussions with him. Not every single one of them was trying to spring the bribe. Felix wasn't a stupid man. He was a governor, for goodness sake. I believe that Felix was searching, as many of us are searching, for a sense of identity. But God is searching for us. And we have to stop thinking about it. We have to stop the cognitive search and get on with living it out. Get on with making that step rather than putting it off till tomorrow. So what I thought I'd do is to look at some of the reasons why Felix may well have put off that decision. Firstly, all too often we think we can make it alone. Society has perpetuated a whole individualistic notion that we've all a part of now. And we think that I matter and that I can make it and I will get there somehow. Felix was a responsible man. And sometimes we blame responsibility. We blame it for not giving us the time for God, and we also hide behind it, believing that we can cope with everything because we can cope with the responsibilities that life has given us in our job or in our studying or in our families. And we make a show of strength, as if in that strength alone we'll put up with everything. Of course, something hits us every now and then, and we realise that our strength is not what we thought it was. And I look at this passage and I wonder who really is on trial. Is it Paul or is it Felix? See, Felix was judging Paul and judging what he said about God, but God all the time is judging Felix and Paul. Who is on trial in your life? Is God on trial? Are you testing God? Are you judging what he has for you? Are you judging what others say about God? Are you battling with them, as we heard earlier in the story that we were told? Are you battling with friends trying to prove them wrong? You see, Felix had got that very thing wrong. That isn't where the battle lies. The battle is not against each other. And neither is it against God. And that's the first thing that I want us to learn. And I was reading about a psychologist this week who tells a story. He talks about the North Sea in Germany and going to the beach there. But it reminded me how years ago I went to Spain and saw exactly the same thing. Tourists digging holes in the beach. And then they'd lay in them and catch the sun, and they'd build a sort of wall around them, and it would be their bit of territory and nobody would come near it. And of course the tide eventually comes in, doesn't it? And you see people smiling and grinning and maliciously sort of rejoicing in the fact that somebody else's hole has become full of water and theirs is still dry. But of course the tide creeps up the beach and eventually gets their hole as well. And they have no hole left. Now Adler, who is a psychologist, can see this. So I'm sure we can too. That's a little bit like real life. We rejoice in other people's failings too often. We work too hard at making ourselves strong. We make too much trouble about keeping our own hole on the sand, as if it'll keep us safe, rather than working together against the invading tide. And in life, our battle is not against one another, and it's not against God. It's against the tide of evil and suffering that is so much a part of our world. And we need to learn that we can't stand alone. We need to stand together, and then we need to learn too that God is actually on our side and standing with us as we face the pressures of this life. That's what Felix needed to learn. And in that way, I think we're all a little bit like Felix, because we forget that God is on our side. I think there's a second reason why Felix put off the decision. And it's about change. It's about the fact that we don't like change. Again, Sophie could do this talk far better than me because she told you all about change. We don't like change. On Friday at our prayers in the chapel, we read John 8 and verse 47. It was set for us in the lectionary. We didn't choose it. We weren't looking for it. It just jumped up and hit us in the face, really. And it says this: "He who belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God." In my own journey, one of the reasons I kept putting off making a decision was because I wasn't sure that God made any sense. I couldn't hear him. I couldn't meet him. I couldn't see him. I couldn't feel him. And it's a bit like Thomas, who wants to put his hands in the wound of Christ. We have to make that step of faith. When we belong, then all of a sudden it's like scales falling off our eyes and we can see God and we can hear him and he's so much more tangible. But all the time we're trying to reason him along and trying to make sense of it, we've missed the point altogether. God calls us to change, and the decision itself will involve change. It means recognizing for a start that God is looking for you, that you're not in charge, you're not in control, you're not looking for God alone, but God is also looking for you, reaching out for you, wanting to pull you to himself. And I think this is one of the reasons why Felix found it so hard, because he was well acquainted with the way. Look with me just for a minute there at verse 24 onwards. Several days later, Felix came with his wife, Drusilla. He brought wisdom with him, you see. She was a Jewess. He sent for Paul and listened to him as he spoke about faith in Christ Jesus. You can see them sitting there, can't you? In the edge of the prison, listening to each other, talking to one another. As Paul discoursed on righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid and said, "That's enough. You may leave. When I find it convenient, I will send for you." If we wait until it's convenient to change, I guess we'll be here all night. Change is always painful. Change is always a struggle. But change is what we're called to. Change, however, that is helped and supported and strengthened and guided by the Holy Spirit. Another reason then why Felix put off the decision. It's a fairly common one, really. It's one we all use an awful lot for lots of decisions. I haven't got enough time. Now, the problem with that is that it's true in more ways than one, and we forget that. We think that we haven't got enough time. And I don't mean a lack of it generally, but actually a shortage of it fundamentally. Felix thought he had all the time in the world. He could wait till it was convenient. He could wait till it was easy. And yes, he certainly had 2 years, but that's recorded for us in Acts. But in a few weeks' time, we're going to be reading about the thief on the cross on Good Friday, who has minutes to live and turns to Jesus and makes his decision. Death, whether it's our own or a good friend's, or in the news, if we sit and ponder it, sharpens our minds. Sharpens our minds to the eternal reality. The fact that actually life on earth is terminal, whether we have cancer or some other illness. We don't have enough time to make a decision. Many don't have the privilege that the prisoner had who was hanging on the cross. Putting off the decision today, maybe putting it off till it's too late. As Paul discoursed on righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid and said, "That's enough for now. You may leave. When I find it convenient, I will send for you." Whenever we make a decision of commitment in our Christian journeys, whether we've already begun with Christ or whether we're sort of 10 or 15 years down the line, we can't afford to put off the decision. But we seem to think we can. And that's why we're a bit like Felix. But I want to come now to his big problem. It comes again in that verse 25. We seem to be spending a lot of time there, but maybe it's a verse to take away and ponder. As Paul discoursed on righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid. Felix was afraid. Yes, we are afraid. We're afraid of thinking that we can't make it alone. We're afraid of thinking that we might have to change. We're afraid of thinking that our time is running out. Felix was afraid. Felix was afraid of the Jews. That's why he kept Paul in prison. Felix was probably afraid of his wife, Drusilla, a Jewess, who may turn against him as she had done against her former husband. He was afraid of Paul, for he was a prisoner who had more bottle than he himself and had more freedom in prison than Felix had being the governor. Above all, he was afraid of himself, that change may occur. Just think, if you're Felix sitting there watching this little prisoner in front of you, What if you ended up like Paul? What happens if you end up being called to demonstrate a faith, encourage the church, and ending up not as the judge, but in prison yourself? Can you imagine what that meant for Felix sitting there? Imagining what it would be like for him to be on the other side? No wonder he was afraid. Paul had success and had power and authority, but he could see himself stripped of it and lying helpless in prison. What if God called him that way? No wonder it was scary. But more than any of all those things, I believe that Felix was afraid that he might be wrong. I was reading a book the other day, and I'd never heard this before, and it's interesting really in the light of the lottery being such a big thing at the moment. Apparently one leading London bookmaker was once said in a speech somewhere that the reason people place bets is not to win money, surprised me, but actually due to an underlying human need to be right, to commit oneself publicly to a particular opinion and to be proved right. Well, what if Paul was right and Felix had been wrong all along? If he let his barriers down, if he allowed the truth to confront him, if he allowed Christ to stand before him and confront who he really was, and he discovered he was wrong. That is hard. And then on the other side of the coin, what if Paul was wrong and Felix committed himself to a wrong ideology? He was trapped. Whichever way he went, he could possibly be wrong. And that takes us right back to the beginning, where we want so much to stand in our own strength. He was trapped. He was trapped. And fear of being wrong guides so many of our human decisions and leaves us more trapped than almost anything else. Have you ever had that experience where you're in an argument and you actually realize that you're wrong, but you keep arguing your point? A few laughs. I hope I'm not the only one. It sounds like I'm not. Felix was afraid that his present situation may be wrong, and he was stuck. I think the whole thing pointed up, actually, that maybe he needed God. For if God could give Paul such courage and hope and peace of mind, what a contrast with the fear he found himself sitting within. And it's that acknowledgement of our need for God which has to come sooner or later. To acknowledge that we can't make it by ourselves. To acknowledge that we are in need. To acknowledge that possibly, yes, we are wrong. And possibly we have been wrong for 16, 17, 20, 30, 40 years. To acknowledge that we are frightened. Frightened, yes, of what lies within us, but also of what lies around us. And those acknowledgements to ourselves and to others are hard. And that's why I think we're a little bit like Felix and we put it off. But that is the mistake. Because to be human means to be in need of God. To be a human being means that in our weakness God can reveal his strength. It means that we are relational creatures, and it demands above all that we must relate to God, who is our ultimate and only real help and hope in the battles that we face against the tide of suffering that threatens to take over us. But there's one person I haven't talked about at all, and I want to mention him. Not just was there Felix and Paul, but there was also an invisible guest. You see, Felix thought that when he went to prison, no one could see him talking to Paul. After all, what would they have said if they had? He thought the bribes that he took, the bribes that he was hoping to get from Paul, were unseen. He thought he was judging Paul's story, and all the time God was judging his story. And Felix rejected God. But the good news is that God didn't reject Felix. God waited patiently for Felix. And you see, that's another problem. God is a little like an old-fashioned gentleman. He'll not force you. Only you can take that step. He is like the best lover in the world. He respects you. He is like the best parent ever. He will watch us slip up time and time and time again. He'll watch us walk away from him and his love. And my hunch is it hurts him. And he'll watch us do it over and over again. At that time, Felix was hoping that Paul would offer him a bribe, so he sent for him frequently and talked with him. But when 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by another and left Paul in prison and walked away from that moment of encounter. And God watched him walk away. God came in the person of Jesus Christ to offer us his love, to invite us to relate to him. Will we keep walking away from him? Will we keep thinking we can do it in our own strength? If Christ was before you now, as Paul was before Felix, truth before your eyes, as Christ was before Pilate, bearing the blood of the nails and the thorns, though, the blood of the cross on which he died for one reason only, because he loves you and wants to relate with you. If he was before you now, would you still put off turning to him? Would you still delay? Would you be like Felix, the adjourner? Or would you swallow your pride, risk being changed, embrace your fears, and say, yes, I want to be loved. I can't cope alone and I need your help. You might decide not to. You might decide to put it off. But God will wait for you. But please don't be too much like Felix. Don't leave it too late and walk away forever. I want us to be still. I want us to be quiet. I want us to close our eyes. I want us to picture Christ standing before us. Whatever your image of Jesus Christ is, remember that he hung on that cross and suffered and was in pain for you because he loves you. And as you see him before you reaching out in the silence, I just want you to decide whether now's the time to offer a bit more of your life to him. Lord Jesus Christ, I've been a Christian for a long time and I still very often put off making a decision to put you first. I still struggle to put you first in my life and to be 100% committed to you. Give each one of us here this evening the courage to take that step of faith tonight and tomorrow, and throughout the rest of our lives with you. And I just want to thank you for loving us and being there for us. in the dark places as well as the good times. Amen.